gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Welcome to the show. Hi, I'm Hal Sparks. I'm filling in while Steph and the Mooks are away on vacation this week. It's a short one. We had Labor Day yesterday. We had a day off, so Tony and I will have to cram in our usual week of annoying you with loud heavy metal and hard rock music all week long into 4 days instead of five. So we might have to double down. There may be, we might not be able to soft pedal and play like the odd Aerosmith track. We may have to go for Napalm Death. Just for the purpose of it.
Ooh, let's shift it in Droid.
There you go. Yeah, put in some Droid, some Helmet.
Ooh, yeah.
Appropriate when we're leading up to the, you know, Syria military action, not quite war, what shall we name it? It depends on who you ask. Welcome to the show, by the way. There's a lot to talk about, not the least of which is the fact that we're streaming on Ustream right now at howlsparks.com/Ustream. You can watch there and join in the chat. And there's going to be a lot of reason to chat today and probably through the rest of this week, because the president threw everybody for a loop on Saturday. So there's, I'm going to play bits of the audio. I'm sure many of you have heard it, but if you have not, the president came out and essentially made the case for why we need to be dropping bombs in Syria right now. This is vaguely the reasoning he gave.
Now, this attack is an assault on human dignity. It also presents a serious danger to our national security. It risks making a mockery of the global prohibition on the use of chemical weapons. It endangers our friends and our partners along Syria's borders, including Israel, Jordan, Turkey, Lebanon, and Iraq. It could lead to escalating use of chemical weapons or their proliferation to terrorist groups who would do our people harm.
Okay, so that's not only a series of decent reasons why you would want to take military action. Again, let's clear something up right now before we get into the murky parts of this conversation, which is exactly what it's going to be, because I have no doubt I'm going to get a lot of blowback on both sides, right and left, about the validity of the administration's argument, our genuine distrust and our cry wolf reflex that everybody has had because of the Bush administration. This sounds just like the lead up to Iraq. And we've heard it all before, and it's all making me very nervous. And this is what the sales pitch for war always sounds like, and which is true, by the way. The problem is whether it's valid or not. That's the issue. That's where critical thinking kind of comes in. But during the conversation about all of this stuff, I'm going to be explaining to you the varying sides of the argument. And we need to make abundantly clear that explanation is not advocacy. Anytime I explain to you why some people might want to go to war or do a limited military action or bomb Syria's chemical weapons facilities, I'm not automatically saying I agree with their assessment, nor do I automatically agree with people say we shouldn't do anything. I will be explaining to you why those people might want those things, both overt reasons and covert reasons. And that's where we get into some really murky areas. So in discussing that, I don't want everybody, when I start explaining to you, by the way, the administration's reasons for why they might want to actually bomb some chemical weapons facilities within Syria, that you go, that's just a march up and give peace a chance and blah, blah. I get it. I'm just explaining to you where this is coming from, so that we can all make an informed decision. That's a big part of this. And unfortunately, totally missing from the regular, especially the Beltway media's coverage of this particular situation. Man, last week, if you paid attention to any network, we're going in Saturday. There is no way we won't be bombing by Friday night. That's what everybody was saying. The president was going to make a statement. I was on the air on my show, the Al Sparks radio program, Mega Worldwide, on WCPT Radio in Chicago, and on chicagosprogressivetalk.com. And we were sitting there during the show. I usually do a happy ending of the show. The last 15 minutes of the show, the last segment of the show, is good news. News that, you know, might give you a chance to believe, you know, that there's actually a future. That in all this talk of austerity and, you know, world markets collapse and you know, Fukushima leaking 18 times as much radiation as they said it did. Not two times. Not 18 degrees more. 18 times. Okay? That's like earthquake exponent that they're talking there. That kind of stuff freaks everybody out. So we need to remember that that kind of stuff has been going on forever. And that we all got to keep our eye on the ball, and that is a future where we all live a little better, a little freer, a little cleaner, and a little more socially open. And that's the reality. So I do that happy ending at the end of the show. Well, the whole show, we're sitting there waiting for the president to come out and announce what he's going to do. We're all, you know, the president's going to be coming out any minute. He was going to come out at the half hour point, and we're all sitting there watching the podium. Like, well, at least I have one segment of news. If he comes out, I can play that, and we can still get to the happy ending, still leave cheery, because he's going to announce that we've already started bombing. You know, that's what we're used to. And he comes out, and we're like, you know, it's, you know, like, okay, well, this is going to play over the happy ending in a moment of sheer irony. The happy part of the show where we focus on the positive aspects of that we are actually changing for the better is going to be ruined by the president coming out and hawk-like making the case that they're going to start bombing Syria. And that's what it sounded like. Until this happened.
Moreover, the chairman has indicated to me that our capacity to execute this mission is not time sensitive. It will be effective tomorrow, or next week, or 1 month from now. And I'm prepared to give that order. But, having made my decision as commander-in-chief based on what I am convinced is our national security interests, I'm also mindful that I'm the president of the world's oldest constitutional democracy. I've long believed that our power is rooted not just in our military might, but in our example as a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And that's why I've made a second decision. I will seek authorization for the use of force from the American people's representatives in Congress.
What did I just hear? Did I actually hear a president be a president? In the world of continuing military authorization, ongoing steamrolling war, that we are just perpetually at war in this 1984 machinery where the authorized use of military force gives the president the ability at any point, if he wants to launch nukes preemptively against China, if he so decided, because we are just kind of always at war and people are always kind of related to kind of a terrorist group that's related to some other government in some kind of way, so we can always turn it into a hot war no matter who the opponent is, because we can create some chain of tying Hezbollah somehow to Sweden, you know, because of... Because Hezbollah blew some people up and that nutcase right-wing blonde guy decided to shoot up a bunch of people. And that guy probably cashes his check at the same bank that sat on some money that belonged to these other guys. Oh, that's enough. Shook boosh. You know, we just can. In this world, in this, we're all so used to it that here we go. We're all set. And it even sounded like it. It was like a good plot point in something. You know, where like you're watching a TV show and you're like, oh, yeah, he is. It's like a red herring in a CSI episode. Like, that guy's totally the killer. And then they go, oh, he was out of town the whole time. And you're like, wait a minute. Then who is it? You know, it was dramatic. And it was really fascinating to watch the media lean into this. We got to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to take some of your calls. 773-763-9... Oh, no, I'm calling... That's the... Listen to me automatically giving out my regular number. 1-800-STEP-12. That's the easier... I can't believe I did it. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. I'm Hal Sparks. I'm filling in on the Stephanie Miller Show. We'll be back right after this. Now, not only did the president say, I'm going to talk to Congress, but then the Congress went about saying some very, reassuring things where they were right for all the wrong reasons. I'm talking to you, Rand Paul. We'll be back.
It's fun for ages 8 to 80. Join us.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Yeah, don't expect me to interrupt that, Tony. You're going to have to dial it down or I'm never going to... It is truly a Hal Sparks and Tony Sorrentino filling in for Stefan the Mook's moment when we play our first break. Yeah. By the way, my girlfriend went and saw Sabbath. Ooh. Sunday night.
Oh, yeah, they just played in town.
Yeah,
right?
Well, no, they were in Vegas. Ooh. Saw them live, and it's great stuff.
Oh, that is so much fun live. I saw them at, all the Ozfests over the years, and they were just killed.
Yeah, she was sending me videos of them, and Ozzy just sounds fantastic. And it was interesting that she immediately, the first video she sent was War Pigs, beginning of War Pigs. And I don't know that she knows the music well enough to know which song they were doing or if they opened with that or whatever, considering the situation we find ourselves in. It would not surprise me.
That song has a great history behind it.
Oh, absolutely.
The way it got released out here in this country and stuff. Oh, I can go on about that one.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, it's a big deal. What we're going through. Let me take some of these calls, and then I'm going to play a little more audio, too, of... Not only what the president said and what the plan going forward is, but also the response to each of these. Let's go to Dave in Buffalo. Hey, Dave.
Hi.
Hiya. Fire away. Go ahead.
I've been debating this with a number of peaceniks, and, there seems to be a lot of consternation about the sarin part, but, it really boils down to the punishment part. And you have to realize that Syria is kind of run like an organized crime gang where you have the Assad family and various people in it basically extracting money from residual amounts of oil they have left, and they don't really have very much left in oil, mm-hmm. Syria, and smuggling and all kinds of other stuff.
Right.
And they have this epic drought that's been introduced by global warming where you have about 10 million Syrian farmers that are now kind of redundant. And these guys are all money-centered. So if you want to punish them, killing people is not really going to help. They don't really care. They're like psychopaths and then some. Take away their money. Their money's stashed all over the world in all those nice places like where Volcker Kemp, capitalists like Mitt and Paul Singer and just all kinds of other psychopaths stash their money. And take away their money. That's what'll hurt them.
Right. That's an excellent point. Let me make sure, because we got a lot of calls. I want to make sure we get to everybody. And let's go to Jim in Michigan. Hey, Jim.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I think he just can't make a decision, and that's why he's going to Congress. Last week or 2 weeks ago, he said he doesn't need Congress approval to do basically anything, and now all of a sudden he needs Congress's approval.
Actually didn't say he needed approval. He thought the people's representative should actually have a stake and a say in it. There's a difference between believing based on the Bush doctrine of doing things that you actually technically can do it. In many ways, the same way the NSA technically can have a program like PRISM, and it's legal under the Patriot Act. But is it a good idea?
Okay, so when the people in the Middle East hear Obama equivocating, they're going to be like you and be intellectual about it and say, well, actually, he's doing the right thing. Or are they going to say he's weak and a coward, he talks tough, and then he backs down?
So how about this? What if he just kind of bombs without finding out whose side we're supposed to be on, or he just, without any thought about it, does like Bush and says, bring it on, and we end up bombing somebody, and they end up recruiting based on it? Beg your pardon?
Why did they send him to Washington in the first place? you should have sent the warships in the first place, if you're with your logic.
No, there's a big difference between sending warships because there's a serious situation and just bombing someplace just to appear tough to people you don't you don't take seriously on the world stage anyways. So what's your option? I'll tell you what. Here's the thing. Regardless of Obama, what do you think? What do you think we should do? Jim in Michigan, you're in charge. What would you do in this situation?
A, I wouldn't have said using chemical weapons as a crossing a red line. A, I wouldn't have done that. A, I would have formed a coalition and issued economic sanctions before using military force. That's what I would have done as a leader and president. And if I would have said using chemical weapons as a red line, I would have went to Congress beforehand and had an actual plan. If A happens, I'm going to do B up my sleeve. I'm not going to then debate it after he uses it, which is a thorough sign of weakness from the United States.
Okay, so before chemical weapons were actually used, we have a treaty in place and a UN resolution in place that says that the use of chemical weapons is a red line by all international UN mandate and by international law. That's standing. So before chemical weapons were used, you would have made a specific trip to Congress and go, if this guy uses chemical weapons. Because you don't have any actionable intelligence that he's going to at any particular point. But if in case he does that, I'm going to do this, and I want you're okay to go ahead. So the second he uses chemical weapons, I want the ability to go in. This is what you're saying. You would have gone.
He used chemical weapons 12 times. He already used chemical weapons 12 times. So on the first time, saying, okay, this guy is using chemical weapons, we need a plan of action, because I'm going to go on television and say this is a red line.
Okay.
So this is not the first time he used it.
So, based on, you mean in this conflict in particular?
Yes. This is the 11th time he used chemical weapons.
Okay.
So this is not the first time.
Gotcha. Okay. And so why was there no international response before this particular incident?
Because are you going to wait for France and England to do
something? No, for us or anybody else. I mean, I don't mean, because the UK actually had a vote on it, whether they do anything or not.
Okay.
Here's the point, Jim. What would you do? And you're in this situation currently. The point I'm trying to make is, are you going to bomb based on what the inspectors say? Are you going to wait until they actually tell you who? They have no evidence of for sure that it came from the Assad regime. But you're going to go in anyways.
You cannot bomb. Because if you bomb, what's going to happen is either you're going to kill innocent children with the bombing, or Assad's going to kill his own children, the country's children, and put it on TV saying, look what the Americans did.
Okay, so you're saying don't go in. You're saying don't go in.
You cannot go in. You cannot. Obama got beyond belief. But you cannot go in because children are going to be killed, or you're going to kill children, blame it on the U.S., and it's going to unite the Arab world against us.
Gotcha. Okay. So the idea is that after all that, Jim in Michigan would not go in. How much time do we have? We've got one more call before we go to the break, and then I'm going to explain to everybody how they're all wrong in a minute. Let's go to Carl in Nashville. Hi, Carl.
That's amazing. After all that, he would do the same damn thing that he would call President Obama weak about.
Exactly.
Absolutely incredible. I mean, he don't even realize he just contradicted himself.
Exactly. He would have gone to Congress, gotten a resolution that if chemical weapons are used, I want to do this, and then ultimately in the end would not have gone in because Assad or he would have ended up killing kids, and that would actually not benefit us politically in the air. That was the point I was trying to get to.
The same thing.
Right.
And it's the same thing he was bitching about the president, but here's the point.
Exactly.
What I took from the speech, the president effectively made Congress, how can I say this right here? He made Congress useful again. Because what he did was make them have skin in the game, one, and he actually made them have this thing called a debate.
Absolutely.
We got Democrat and Republican on one side, Republican and Democrat on the other side debating with each other about what we should do as a country instead of having Republicans have knee-jerk reactions to whatever he's against.
Absolutely. That's right. We'll be back right after this. More of the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks filling in. It's a shame that Dave Mustaine turned out to be such a jerk. I mean, it's no surprise. When the guys in Metallica can kick you out on tour for being a jerk. They left him by the side of the road with his gear. That's how they kicked him out of the band. So it's no surprising that his personality hasn't changed all that much over the years. And he's kind of shifted from being, like, now he views himself as sort of a right-wing Christian. And wrote, though, Holy Wars, which is the whole point of all this nonsense of fighting over variant mild degrees in religious fervor. Because it was, I think to a lot of people, it's almost understandable in the abstract. Never mind the fact that Christianity, Judaism, and Islam are all Abrahamic traditions, all have many of the same teachers, preachers, and philosophers. Jesus himself is in the Quran more than Muhammad is. That's right. Jesus shows up in the Quran more than Muhammad does. Is a venerated teacher and is beloved in Islam. He's even called the Messiah. But they have a different view of what that word means. And so that varying degree, that mild tick, most people would look at, you know, Christians versus Muslims and go, that's a holy war worth having. You know, those people are different. But Christians worship God. Muslims worship Allah, even though it's the same word for the same guy. Because it is a guy and their teachings on both sides. And it's the same name. It's just a different language. It's like going, if two brothers, one of them calls their father dad, the other calls him papa. But they have a fight over who could beat up who. It's the same guy. It's the same guy. So, that being said, what you have here, and we will discuss this in depth after the next break and into the next hour, because it really is, the history of Syria is immensely complicated. Never mind the fact that Syria, for all practical purposes, is not a country. It is a constructed entity that the French helped define post-Ottoman Empire, post-Arabs beating the Ottoman Empire, you know, wresting back Damascus from 400 years of rule, and then coming in, as Eddie Izzard would say, and go, I claim the name of France. You can't claim us. We live here. Do you have a flag? No. Well, you don't have a country. No flag, no country. And then they basically said, this is just like Iraq. They said, this is the area. This is now a country because we say so. Never mind the fact that it's overlapping groups of nomadic tribes and different feudal lords in the area of the world was not defined the way large swaths of Europe at that point had been divvied up by the French and the Spanish and the English fighting for, you know, millennia, practically, you know. And so there's this, in many ways, they created these borders in the first place that a lot of these disputes are about. And we'll get to more of that, because there's a depth of that, and I still want to actually take some calls, because listen to the calls, listen to what people are saying about this, because I really want you to hear where the mental space is after years of the Bush administration's doctrine of the president can do whatever the heck he wants, and you got to sit back and do it. The authorized use of military force, because it was attached to Al-Qaeda and terrorism, can now be used kind of abstractly in regard to almost anybody, because almost anybody in the Middle East can be traced somehow through, terrorist monies. And that's enough for wiggle room for the AUMF to be used to almost attack anybody, in the same way that you could probably track almost any South American president to drug money if you really tried, whether they are on the good side or not. You could trace, okay, well, they're in the same way that any of our presidential candidates have ties to Goldman Sachs, and Goldman Sachs has a stake in some banks that launder money for both of those types of organizations, which is not disputable on any level. But saying automatically, that immediately means that, well, we could depose the president of the United States because he was put there by drug money, you know, is the same thing as saying, well, we can go, using the AUMF, to go in and say we can knock out Assad because he has ties to, he's using chemical weapons that will fall in the hands of terrorists, and it's in the national security interest, which is exactly the case made, and is not, by the way, a bad case to make in the abstract. Yes. that gun is laying there. The wrong person might pick it up and shoot somebody with it. So we kind of need to get that off the table. That in its framework is not wrong. It's whether or not, A, you believe it, or whether or not you believe that that's actually a solution. And if you looked at the media last week, not only was there no other solution proffered at all, but that they could not wait. I mean, I thought David Gregory, had gotten a Dear John letter from the Dear Gregory. Things aren't working out. I know you thought we were going to sleep together this weekend, but I've had second thoughts. I mean, that was the look on everybody's face. They had they didn't know what the hell to do on the Sunday talk shows. They thought they were going to be armchair quarterbacking. They thought they were going to go shift from talking about policy, which they think has low ratings and bores people, to sitting there just throwing up visuals of bombs landing. Even if there were only two bombs, they play them over and over like it was a consistent, like it was just going on like the Iraq War, like Shock and Awe, Little Brother or something. They just play it on a loop, you know? And so, they were distraught that we didn't just, like, all right, that's enough for me. I don't need it. The inspectors haven't figured out what's going on. I'm just going to push the button. Forget it. I can do that. That's what they were expecting. And that's what a lot of us were expecting. I totally was. With that drum up, the president was saying he hadn't made a decision yet. He said that all the way up to Friday. And we find out now that that was exactly the truth, that he was weighing all sides of the issues because it has multiple sides. As you can tell from our right-wing caller who called the president weak for not doing this, you know, for not just bombing the country, for saying there was a red line and saying that if chemical weapons were a red line, and then saying he would have gone back to Congress before all this happened and gotten a resolution from Congress that if this guy uses chemical weapons, that was a red line, and he would get to just, as soon as that red line was crossed, he could attack, and then telling us he wouldn't attack because Assad would kill a bunch of kids, put them on camera, and say this is what the U.S. did. So he wouldn't have done anything different at all. He didn't follow the exact same plan as the president. It was different language, maybe. I mean, that's how dense this conversation is. This is how mired this whole thing is. And, you know, almost tired of being right about it.
I absolutely agree.
Thank you, Mr. President. Let's take more calls on, let's see. There's nobody there. I'm going to grab somebody who's been sitting there. Let's go to David in Orange County. Hey, David.
Good morning. Okay. The last, you know, the right-wing caller, you know, I got to be honest, I am more to the right than the left. I served under five different presidents in my time with the U.S. Navy. And what happened, you know, probably last year when Obama was being interviewed about, you know, the Syrian war, and people were probably asking, when is the United States going to get involved? And that's when that red line came up.
Right.
What he should have done at that point is he should have went to his Joint Chiefs and he should have had them drawing up some kind of a action plan or whatever else in case that line ever did get crossed. And when it did cross, there shouldn't have been no media or whatever else until after the fact, after them cruise missiles were up in Assad's butthole. And that's the bottom line.
So
now he's trying to bring it back to Congress because he's looking for wiggle room to sit there and say if Congress shoots it down, he'll say, "Well, Congress told me I can't do it." That's
so you
wrong.
don't think Congress would? You don't think the Republican controlled House will allow it, or the Democratic controlled Senate will not allow it? Which do you think?
I don't think either one of them are really going to. When I hear L.A. type, like Maxine Waters, who's very anti-war or whatever else. She's sitting there running her mouth.
She's in the minority in the House.
Well, she's a minority in the House, but what she's backing, like, she's a Republican, so pro-war. I'm going, oh, boy. You know, and then Pelosi, she's always been anti-war. And what's even more scary is John Kerry.
Are you yourself pro-war? Would you call yourself pro-war?
I've seen enough war, my friend.
Okay, all right. I'm dead serious. You're saying she's you're using that phrase. You're saying she's very anti-war. Would you consider yourself, by contrast, pro-war?
If it's for the right reasons. I don't think we should be going to any more wars for oil. But chemical weapons, we should have taken those out 8 months ago. And we could have done that on a surgical strike.
Are you sure to some degree we haven't already to some degree? Because what you're talking about is covert acts. We've been arming the Free Syrian Army during this time. McCain and Obama had this big conversation almost a year ago, and we started funneling weapons to those guys. We have done certain things, but we haven't done overt, because you can't fire a missile without somebody noticing, as you noticed with Israel today.
I'd rather Assad have them chemical weapons than the people that are in that Free Syrian Army.
Well, do you know, the Free Syrian Army, the actual people who we are, supporting in this situation, and we got to take a break, but I want to, I'll address this on the other side, too. These guys are basically their version of, Occupy or the Jasmine Revolution or the Arab Spring, whatever you want to call it. The problem is there's 70,000 jihadists fighting alongside
of them.
And so perhaps we know that the tipping point is coming. We know Assad's on his last legs anyways, that this is eventually going to go that way because we're not going to support his regime. And we certainly don't necessarily think that, autocratic rule or monarchical rule essentially in that area is a good idea, and it certainly scares Israel after the last meeting that Kerry had with them before all this stuff started, because they decided, after a lot of talk about being nice to Israel, have decided to pull back from that plan entirely. So on the one hand, maybe we want to attack their chemical stockpiles, not because we're worried about Assad having them, but we're worried about anybody having them.
Well, the best thing is if Russia's that tight with them or whatever else, what Russia should do, they should, as a partner of the world community, say, let us take these out of the country. Let us burn them up in our incinerators.
Yeah, but they have to admit that they exist and admit that the Assad regime used them, and he's an ally, and that's in violation of the UN Charter, and they're part of the UN Security Council. Do you think that's actually going to happen? We got to take a break. No, of course not. Well, that's the issue. Like, is everybody wants to act like this is cut and dry, and that this means the president's strong because he came up with an attack plan, but he's weak because he's asking Congress, because we're a representative democracy, and while we are a representative democracy, should have gotten that go ahead months ago, before the stuff happened, after you put your coat up on the higher peg, before you've written your letter home, after you've called your mother, the timeline, everybody gets to juggle. But this is serious. We'll be back right after this.
The following program is closed captioned for the thinking impaired.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, and we're talking war pigs this morning. Because there's a lot of drum up to this. I mean, if you look at who's calling in this morning to talk about stuff, or even you look on Twitter, a lot of people, I'm at Hal Sparks on Twitter. You can follow me there. You can also message me during the show. We're getting a lot of response there to not only our callers discussing this issue, but people are actually giving their two cents as to what they, sort of armchair quarterbacking, from we should hit military targets and oil refineries to cripple Assad's military and finances. which is basically Iraq War Redux. What's the difference there? That's essentially what we said we were going to do in Iraq, and that was supposed to take a week, cost less than $15 billion, and we're going to get flowers and chocolates. Some are saying they're against bombing and that we should take care of our own infrastructure first. You do realize we can do both, right? That we can't have a domestic and foreign policy at the same time, and that it doesn't bode well either to the intellect of the American people or the presidents that we've had in the past that somehow we have to make a decision between the two. Not only do we have cabinet positions and entire sections of the government dedicated to both aspects of things that can be 24/7 doing that job. It's not like everybody paving a road here gets handed a machine gun whenever there's something happens in the world. You're like, oh, no, guys, enough asphalt today. Hop in the military carrier. We're going to drop you in Qatar. You know, like it doesn't work that way. Everybody not only has a job to do, they can also do that job. There's no mystery to this. So here's the thing. So we got some right-wingers calling in. Obama's weak and he's flip-flopping because while he believes he has the legal ability based on the authorized use of military force and the continuing resolutions of war against al-Qaeda and terrorism that have been codified by the Bush administration for a decade and made it impossible, while we want to try the Bush administration for war crimes, the Gordian knot of legal justifications that was laid there made it almost impossible to do so, and the most lefty want to believe these guys should frog march, which I totally agree with, has to at least admit that there's enough legal precedent that they establish themselves and enough twists and turns where they would more than likely walk, or that people below them would end up taking the hit, like Scooter Libby kind of did with Valerie Plame. When I don't think any of us don't think for a second that Cheney yelled into a phone, make, Joe Wilson pay. You know what I mean? I don't think anybody thinks that Scooter Libby was the singular person involved in that situation. That's just silly. But we also know that there are walls upon walls of legal justification and protection that would just tie up the works. And so you have a choice as a president. Do you spend time throwing those guys in jail, or do you spend time fixing the economy and trying to get people working again? Because those guys knew that one of the best ways they could protect themselves from being tried for war crimes was to wreck the economy before they left town. Because essentially, yeah, that's another conversation. We'll have that, I have no doubt, just by bringing that up. The phones are on fire right now. I think they're actually jacked. They're completely full. And rightly so. This is a complex issue. Let me take a couple more calls, Yeah, let me take one more call, and then I want to play a piece of audio. This is for all my Republican friends and our right-wingers who think that the president is weak and that his justification for going in there is strong and that the Republicans wouldn't behave this way or that they're automatically strong on national security or something along those lines. I'll play a piece of audio that might make you rethink that whole thing. But let me take a call real quick. Let's go to Marie in Atlanta. Hi, Marie.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I still don't think we know enough about the source of the chemical attack.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, in some respects, that doesn't matter. I mean, chemical weapons are wrong no matter what. But here's what it comes down to for me.
Right.
The only way that an authorization for a limited strike is going to be legitimate in my mind, because I'm a procurement professional, and I know that the minute there's a declaration or the minute there's an authorization, that constitutes an emergency under the Defense Federal Acquisition Regulations, which authorizes no-bid contracts, a waiver of competition, and all kind of spending off the books.
Right.
So the only way it would look legitimate to me is if the authorization includes language that says, this shall not constitute a waiver of competitive procurement requirements, or nor shall it constitute an emergency within the DFARS.
Right.
So anyway,
I totally agree. You're absolutely right. We've only got a minute left. I'm going to play that clip. I'm going to play it on the other side. I'll do an old-fashioned radio tease. Let me play the golden boy of the rights version of why we shouldn't attack Syria after the break when we come back. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. Obviously, this is a murky issue. Obviously, there are a lot of sides to this. So the president actually giving it some thought and saying, we need to actually have an open debate about this, is one of the greatest turns back towards constitutional democracy that we could hope for, especially considering the decade we came out of with the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. We'll be right back after this on the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Stephen the Mooks while they're away on vacation with Tony Sorrentino on the Rock Box.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Welcome back and good morning. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in all week while Steph and the Mooks are away on vacation, which means you can guarantee news will be made while I'm here. That's what always happens. It arguably happened on Saturday when the president decided to, while he stated in his statement that he has a plan for how he believes we should act against Syria's use of chemical weapons, that he believes he has the legal authority as president to carry out that action based on previous treaties and actions by previous presidents and whatnot, but that he believes that as the president of the largest representative democracy in the world, that he should involve Congress. So here we go. He sat down with McCain and Lindsey Graham, which are hilarious. The Wayland Flowers and Madam of the Congress right now, two senators who pretty much are a co-echo chamber most of the time. The president is making his case about how they're going to go forward, both in speaking to the UN, both in, you know, the G20 summit is coming up. It will happen between now and whatever action or vote is taken. The Congress will not vote in any form or fashion until at the earliest next Monday. That would be the soonest they would do it. And here's the interesting thing. So we get all this back and forth. Let me be real clear about how I think the president's statement on this or his position on this would have been responded to by the right no matter which way he went. In the case that he decided that while it is clear to him and based on the intelligence that he has the Assad regime used chemical weapons, that this is a violation of UN law and of international law and the prohibition of chemical weapons, that he has the right to act, he believes that the Congress should be involved, we should have a debate, and that the use of military force is something that in our country deserves, arguably, its day in court, as it were. That people should be able to tell their representatives how they think the vote should go. Those representatives should stand on the floor and say, I believe that this should go a certain way. He's saying, I have a plan. This is it. I have it. You know, it's laid out in front of you. I would want you to act on this. But I will leave it up to Congress to make their decision because Congress should be the one to authorize war. The right-wing response to it is they're laughing at us. They think we're weak. The members of the Syrian party that are in control, the Assad regime, and the people and their supporters are calling us weak. And I saw this NPR story where they were interviewing people. And there was some stuff on Salon where they're interviewing people and they were like, this person on their way to the pool was saying that they believe that that Obama was shaking during his speech and that Assad is all powerful and that they'll be able to, you know, and P.S. I'm headed to the pool. This is a person who in the middle of a civil war in their country apparently is so, distanced from it that they could go to the pool. And that's kind of amazing to me. I'm sure it happened during our Civil War. I'm sure there were people who went swimming at certain points. And if you interrupted them on their way to go swimming, they would give you their opinion. I don't doubt that for a second. But it seems a bit weird. So, but the right-wing response is, they're laughing at us, and this is a sign of weakness. We should just we the president said red line, and that should be enough. We should just be bombing that place already. We have enough information, even though the inspectors at that point, when everybody was starting to say this, middle of last week, had not said whether or not there were actual chemical weapons used. And certainly, there is no definitive answer as to whether the Assad regime actually said, fire those missiles, or drop those chemical weapons on those people. And if you find out later that some rogue general or something did it because he has a chip on his shoulder because he believes things should be going differently than he thinks the Assad is playing too safe a game and wishes that they would unload on these people that he ordered them or he released them or he found them or they, you know, stacked in a bunch of other missiles are these sarin tipped ones that they were just, it was the next bullet in the chamber, as it were. There's a lot of options about how this happened. But before we even entertained what one of those options may have been, and again, explanation is not advocacy. I'm not telling you this is how it is, and I'm not telling you how it isn't. I'm explaining to you the opinion of some of the people involved in the decision-making on your behalf, especially if you're a right-winger, especially if you're a GOPer, okay? Now, here, Rand Paul is probably the front runner for 2016 in the Republican field right now. He is doing most of the groundwork. He's getting way out ahead. And even though his dad lost to evangelicals by a big stretch because he like his son, believes that they're mentally diseased crackpots, because anybody who follows Ayn Rand believes that anyone who is religious is mentally ill, because you can't have it both ways. Rand Paul, this was his reason as to why we should not bomb Syria. Syrian military sites that contain chemical weapons, that's the only, there's been no attack on Damascus floated, there's been no shock and awe floated, there's been, the only thing we hear about is this targeted attack and a ratcheting up of the Syrian opposition, and which is, that, by the way, came from McCain. That's McCain's red line. McCain says, if the president's plan does not include giving more weapons and stronger weapons to the rebels, then he might not sign off. If all this is a couple of military strikes on places where, you know, chemical weapons stashes are, that's not enough for John McCain. And he may not vote for this unless it also includes more war. It may not be war-y enough for John McCain. But here's what, this is the reasoning Rand Paul thinks we shouldn't bomb Syria. This is it. This is the reason.
There should be a joint session of Congress, and he should try to convince us of the need for it. He should try to convince us how it's in our national security. And he should also try to overcome things that I've been saying, and that's that there are 2 million Christians who live in Syria, more than just about any other place in the Middle East. And they're on the other side of this war. And I just don't want to see my kids or weapons of the United States being used to kill Christians in Syria.
Well, okay. Huh? So innocent Muslims or people who are not involved in this conflict and are just trying to run their store and be happy and raise some kids and are caught in the middle of a protracted civil unrest that has been the existence of that country since basically 1918, and certainly since 1970 when Assad's father started running the place, up until his death a couple of years ago where his son took over. His big problem is that these bombs might hit Christians that live there, not any other innocent person not involved in current military activity, which I think, be it your opinion about drone strikes or boots on the ground or missiles from the air or from the sea, when you are involved in a hot war or any kind of military action, one would hope that you are only striking military sites and those involved in the actual military action against your forces. That would seemingly be war, as it were. Anything else that isn't an accident is genocide. Anytime you go, okay, we're gonna, here's what we do when we fight a country. We blow up their military bases, their airstrips. We blow up any tank positions or any troop positions we have any awareness of. And, again, explanation is not advocacy. Don't panic. I'm trying to explain something to you. The other option on top of that is we also build blow up infrastructure elements. Power, electrical plants, dams, any hydroelectric power, that kind of stuff, to take the power away from them being able to run that electricity to military, to radar and anti-aircraft stations that they may place in their civilian areas. And in the course of that, because you're blowing up an electrical plant, obviously the civilians who work there may be killed. This would follow within the kind of generalized belief in the militaries of these are acceptable targets. This is what you do when you're at war with a country. Once you get outside that, where you're like, we need to just hit that big section of that city. We need to bomb Baghdad. That in and of itself is a form of genocide, because you are just flat out opening up your weapons at a people. Not the ones with guns, not the ones firing on your aircraft, not all that stuff. That's when you just decide, we got to get rid of these folks, period. And so this idea that somehow the only people who count, according to Rand Paul in this situation, the only innocents involved are Christians. The Christians that happen to live in Syria, which there are a lot of. Who, by the way, live side by side with Muslims all the time, nonviolently. That there are many. Oh, we got to take a break. Man, I've been at this. When we come back, I'm going to take more of your calls. 1-800-STEF-12 is the number. I'm Al Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. When we come back, I'm going to play you McCain's idea of what the good idea for our fight plan should be. Great.
Not bad. Like frisbee golf, I'm glad I tried it once.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
They buried dinosaurs here. The new Alice in Chains record, which is just awesome. I'm going to take some more of your calls. Then I'm going to play John McCain's idea of what a good idea is in this situation. And Lindsey Graham, who I can't decide who's Wayland Flowers and who's Madam in my discussion of the two of them. Tony doesn't know who Wayland Flowers and Madam is. Yeah, the puppet. And yeah, right. Let's go to Tony in Texas, and then we'll go to Jason in D.C. Hey, Tony.
Good morning.
Hiya.
I'm good. Now, the reason I called is I don't know what all the hoopla is about. Thursday and Friday, 200 members of Congress signed a letter saying he needed to bring this before them for them to vote on. He's doing what they want to do. What's the problem?
I agree to some degree. Although at that point, I think there were only 37 people who had signed on to that, and they hadn't agreed that they would actually come back before their vacation was over.
Right, and Saturday it was up to 248, I think. There's only 436 people in the House of Representatives, so that's over 50% where they at.
Right, but you still have the Senate as well. But, do you think it's a good idea to actually put this before Congress and let them debate it?
Yes, it is, just for the fact that the right hates the president so bad that I think he's doing the right thing that way. There's no argument. Had he went ahead and done it himself, they would have been hollering. There was no reason.
Or that he's a dictator, right? It's a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. Right.
I'm country and white. President Obama's a good fellow, but this damn right, they hate him so bad. I mean, there's no justification in the way they do that, man.
Right. Well, I appreciate it, Tony. I'm glad he's doing it, and I think it was amazing that on Saturday he threw everybody for a loop and actually did. You know what the thing is? He shocked us by doing just the normal right thing. We've gone so far down the road of expecting executive privilege from the president insofar as war actions, that when he just went, no, this is what you're supposed to do, everybody was jumping up and down. Like, you know, like I did a new draft of the Declaration of Independence. I took out all the spelling mistakes. We were dancing about it. I appreciate it, Tony. Let me grab Jason in D.C. Hey, Jason.
Hey.
Thanks for holding on.
I appreciate the fact that you as a host actually have discussions with people about things. I noticed the previous host tends to cut people off, but I was going to compliment you specifically on that.
I appreciate it. It gets a little tiring for the other people online like yourself when you're waiting to get it. But
let me kind of bring a couple points. First of all, this thing about Obama making this decision. Look, this is really what happened, okay? You can just tell. The writing's in the tea leaves. This guy, just like with the NSA, how he suddenly comes out and, you know, he's running, he says one thing, then he gets caught with this NSA stuff, and then he says, oh, well, we're going to look into it. Well, I'm pretty sure that somebody came to him on Friday and said, look, your poll numbers are in the tank because only 9% of the population is supporting this crazy thing. And just like the NSA vote, where it was split equally down the middle between Republicans and Democrats with the Amash Amendment to defund, you're going to see the same thing happen with this. And I want you to be equally
Before you say that, though, do you remember the president's speech about the NSA before the Snowden stuff came out?
Look. You elected him to stop these abuses, and suddenly they get caught with this, and then they're going to, oh, well, we're going to look into this.
Well, that's not what I asked you. Do you remember him doing it before the Snowden stuff came out?
No.
Well, he
not
did.
At all.
Well, he did.
No, no. What are you talking about? His point is you elect somebody in office, and his job is one of the first things I'm going to do is go line by line through the NSA to try to figure out all of these abuses that are going on because that's not a way to have a society. And that stuff just goes on the back burner. Okay, but let me just stick with this. Let me stick with the Syrian thing.
Okay.
And this is very important. This is equal split down the middle. You're going to probably find out. I'm looking forward to the vote here because you're trying to demonize as if only Republicans enlist. Now, I'm not a Republican. Okay, I'm an anti-war person. And you're going to find that there's a crazy number of people that are on the left that are in favor of this crazy interventionist policy, A, where the U.S. has zero national interest, and B, Syria poses no direct threat to the United States. And we talk about these people that are running around over there. These people are funded by Qatar and Saudi Arabia to the tune of billions of dollars. They're nothing, a huge portion of them are nothing more than paid mercenaries because they want to build a natural gas pipeline to Western Europe. And what would we do if we find out that there was – what would you do right now if you found out that the gas was released by the rebels? What would you do?
If the gas was released by the
That's
rebels?
That's right. What would you find out if the rebels are the ones with the gas? I mean, because
No, I wouldn't rule that out at all. Again,
Did somebody have to give them the gas?
Hold on one second. Don't confuse when I'm explaining something with my advocacy for that behavior, either way. Don't don't think for a second that I've immediately bought hook, line, and sinker the CIA's assessment of how this went down, or that it may well have not been a section of rebels firing on another section of rebels that they don't agree with, because that's the murky nature of what's going on in Syria. And also, don't immediately write off the fact that I'm actually happy that the president I voted for is doing what he actually said he would do. And it doesn't erase the stuff that hasn't been done yet, but it also has to count as a positive step. Otherwise, we don't go anywhere. Because there's a certain point where anybody who's president of the country will go, you know what, the same whiny people complain no matter what you do, so I'm just going to kind of move ahead with what I want to do instead of going, no, that's what's right, this is what's wrong. Let's fix what's wrong
My daughter got caught with her hand in the cookie jar one time, and the moment I caught her doing it, she said to me, Daddy, can I have a cookie? This is what Obama's doing with this permission thing that's going through. He realizes that the polls are not behind him, and when this vote came out of England, where they said no
when
way,
the polls,
no way.
There's been plenty of situations where the immediate polling behind
it's
a president isn't, and no, hasn't been supportive of a president before a military action, but immediately
but
shifts right 50, afterwards
50,
because America
or
has 50, that.
40, or it 70, 30, or 80-20.
It doesn't matter. It always has shifted that way. Anytime we take a military action, everybody jumps behind the president. It's a nationalistic reflex. That's the problem we have when we immediately create a conflict with Iran or one of these other countries. We got to take a break because we're at the half point, and that's a hard break. When we come back, I'm going to play McCain and Lindsey Graham's idea of what a good idea is. Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks. Filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. They always take a vacation whenever there's huge news going on. It's really almost like their responsibility for helping the world move forward. Let's take a call really quick from Chad in Michigan. Hey, Chad. Chad, are you there? Do we have Chad?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, there you are. Hi. Go ahead.
Hey, well, you know what? I just have a couple points. I think the president, you know, and has been taking hits and knocks from these crazy right-wingers, you know, with regard to how he's been, you know, telegraphing his moves and you know, this is showing weakness and so on and so forth. And but, you know, I think it's actually quite a clever move, you know, similar to the way that, you know, when storms are sweeping in, you know, we have Snowmageddon, you know, it's the anticipation of the storm that is always worse than the storm itself.
Right.
And so I think he's got that going on. And so, you know, there's an anticipation of a hit. The other thing is that you have, you know, if you assume that, or if they, I should say, if the Syrians assume that we know where maybe some of their weapon stores are, and if you're one of those individuals that maybe question whether or not, you know, who in fact was, you know, doing these things, the fact that he's telegraphing this actually flushes those people out because they have to move. If they're saying they're going to get hit, they're going to degrade their weapons capability and so on and so forth, then they have to move it.
Right.
So I think that's actually a good move there. And in terms of the media and, you know, some of the mainstream media that, you know, have also been kind of piling on, you know, I really think, you know, I'm going to go out and buy some stock in Fox and you know, News Corp and NBC, because, you know, these guys, their stock's going to run through the roof because they got a couple weeks of some great nonstop coverage and gnashing of teeth.
Yep, armchair quarterbacking is literally the business of 24-hour news now.
They should be thanking them. You know, there's one thing about this president with regard to, and I think one of the previous callers, you know, was, you know, and I think they're legitimate questions, you know, in terms of, you know, is the president, you know, reacting or acting? But I, you know, I think back to that correspondent dinner when he was taking shots from the right then as well. He went up there and he delivered some of the best lines of the night, you know, blazing Donald Trump. And, you know, while the most monumental military actions were taking place,
right,
had been planned. And this gentleman had such a poker face. And
right.
Such, you know, I mean,
it's amazing. Yeah, it's like that guy who called earlier who was like, I would be doing this covertly and we should have been doing this all along. And my question was, how do we know we haven't to some degree? Maybe we're at the point where the only way we can degrade what's left is through a missile strike that everyone will see, much like Israel and the U.S. launched a missile today, okay, this morning. And the Russians didn't know we were going to launch that missile test, and they flipped out. There was a heat signature of a missile being launched from the Mediterranean, and they wigged out temporarily because they saw this missile launch, because we didn't tip our hat that we were going to test this, and that was just a saber rattle in the old-fashioned sense of the word. That's what happens when you launch an attack on a site like this. And so everything else we've been able to do probably has been below that level of radar. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I love that the guy who calls in is saying, oh, well, you know, if I was them, I would do this. I would have just done it and that would have been that. And then, but I wouldn't have done it because Assad will just kill a bunch of kids and drop them in the street and say it was us. But I will do it, but I won't.
If there's one thing I can, you know, that, again, that moment told me about during that correspondence dinner is that, you know, when it comes to international actions, you know, this president is extraordinarily well prepared in these cases. And I have no doubt that the very questions that we're raising have already been raised and they're being looked at. And, you know, and the fact that he's out there and really just kind of a cool demeanor saying, you know, yeah, we're gonna go to Congress, which I think is also the right thing, and get everybody on board. But it just has several layers of impact in terms of projecting our intentions, getting people that we want to move,
right,
and getting those who would otherwise detract or just, you know, take pot shots, you know, and get them on the record as well.
Absolutely. And that there is impetus from those within the rebels. Let's look at this from another geopolitical point of view. There is definitely a an option in this circumstance, that the chemical weapons did not come from the Assad regime, that they were maybe owned by the Assad regime, a rebel group of jihadists or whoever had come across them at some point in their movements back and forth, in fighting forward and falling back, that they had actually come in contact with these things, that they fired them on other rebels that they do not agree with because they are not as hardline as they are, that kind of thing, to guarantee their strength. That's what McCain keeps talking about in tipping the balance. He's almost talking about tipping the balance within the rebel forces in the direction of the Free Syrian Army and away from the Saudi-backed jihadists. I mean, that's a portion of this. Now, that is a legit possibility. It doesn't mean that's what's happening, but that is a legit possibility. And as president, you would have to deal with that legit possibility. And in the circumstance that you're talking about, one of the things you would do in that situation is, we're going to hit any place where we know there are chemical weapons being held. And the rebels are going to go, oh, the ones who may have dropped these things, may have used them, may have claimed them from the Assad regime and used them on the other rebels or used them as an example to gain ground against the Assad regime, are going, oh, we're sitting on them. We've got them. And then they start moving them and they get hit. There is, by either a covert or an overt action by us or the Israelis. And that's a genuine factor of this entire conflict.
Well, you know what? If there's one thing that they've done really well is that they everybody knows, the jihadists and anybody else knows that those drones are up there. They're up there.
Mm-hmm.
And just like you're saying, if you're sitting on these things, you can take a pretty good bet that we saw it.
Yeah.
and you have to ask yourself, you know, do you want to just sit here and play cool, or do you want to wait for the laser designator to light you up?
Right.
You know.
That's exactly it. I mean, and we'll talk about drones in the next hour too, because I think that's an important conversation to have. Because everybody takes all different sides of that situation by, you know, it's kind of like just saying, you know, give peace a chance and then backing away from whatever that means. And then you go, well, what about Darfur? Should we have acted? And they would have gone, oh, yeah, absolutely. That was one of the biggest missed opportunities that the U.S. military and the American government walked away from. And you go, well, then that's not the same thing. And so you go, which one is? And is Syria that? And if it isn't because you don't like what happened in Iraq, that's not enough of an answer. So it's a lot murkier, and there's a lot more conversation necessary.
Definitely got to be careful.
Exactly.
Got to be careful.
Dude, thanks for calling in. Here's what I want to do. We got a couple minutes before we have to take another break. And I want to – this is what the – in there's right now the president is having a meeting with congressional leaders, cabinet members – and military leaders about the path going forward, the president's plan, which is, you know, we love that phrase, surgical strike, which is a surgical attack of certain military sites that we believe or know, and that part is really foggy, hold chemical weapons. That being said, I'm not sure why, you know, we couldn't wait to go into Iraq because he had chemical weapons and he had weapons of WMD, weapons of mass destruction, before he ever used them, except if you don't count the ones that we sold him that he used on the Kurds and the Iranians, because we were on his side during the Iranian-Iraq war. But that being said, never mind that. The point is, the idea is that what the president is floating is that we hit those, that's that. That's, you know, we're going to hit those strikes, and that's all we're going to do. We're not going to, you know, there's no open bombing of Damascus. We're not going to hit military bases hard. We're just going to hit the places we know or think we know, or know we don't know, or don't know what we don't know. Hello, Donald Rumsfeld. In any of those situations, we're going to attack those places. And here, McCain, who he had a nice meeting with, apparently, I guess McCain took time off from hanging out on the Sunday talk shows, which is his second home, to talk to the president about it. He was very happy about it, but except that it didn't go far enough. Let's play. This is John McCain.
I want to see the plan and a strategy that this will achieve some goals that we need to achieve.
Boom.
Yeah, big bada boom.
Bada boom.
Yeah, so McCain has a very distinct idea of what he wants to achieve. And then let's play the other response.
We emphasized to the president that now it's been
over a year since the president said it would be a game changer if chemical weapons were used. It's been 2 years since the president said Bashar Assad must leave. And we emphasized the importance we place to actions that would degrade Bashar Assad's capabilities, upgrade the opposition, and to see the change the momentum on the ground in order that the Free Syrian Army can prevail over time. That does not mean that any of us support having American boots on the ground.
Yeah, so basically, John McCain is calling for regime change, but with a limited capacity from our side to act that out, that he wants to arm and upgrade the Free Syrian Army with bigger weapons that I'm sure he promises will never, ever be turned around and used on our own troops in another country ever. I'm sure he can totally reassure us that that will never happen. Isn't there that text thing now that people are so worried about, you know, they send a nude picture to a boyfriend or a girlfriend, and then they're worried that that person has it, and if they ever break up, they'll put it online. And so they come up with this new version that immediately calls it back. Like, they send it, and it lasts about 20 seconds, and then it goes away. It erases itself. I think we need to start doing that with our own, the weapons we hand out to anybody else. Never mind the fact that we actually should just be dropping food. that we would actually reach our geopolitical goals a lot quicker, I think, if we dropped, you know, and this will end up on Drudge, just biplanes, planes of, you know, like huge B-52 bombers dropping sex toys all over countries. At that point, you know what I mean? It would move us closer if they just... If only to distract the populace from hating us for a while would actually help us geopolitically, or just the sheer confusion would be helpful in that situation. Just drop stuff, people. Just rubber bouncy balls. Just thousands upon, just for a what the hell reflex would actually probably, you know, move us closer to our geopolitical goals. Never mind the fact that we should just drop food anywhere. Anywhere we're going to bomb, drop food instead, because obviously, it might land on some of the bad people, but if it doesn't kill them, they can still eat it. You know what I mean? But in this situation, his problem is a surgical strike is not enough for John McCain by any stretch. Let's take a break. When we come back, I want to play Lindsey Graham's idea, what a good idea is. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. What do you think the good idea is? What do you think we should be doing in Syria or not doing in Syria? Is it in our national interest? Is it against our national interest? Are we enforcing the chemical weapons treaty and ban? Or should we not be the police of the world anymore? Are we weak because we use our government the way it's supposed to? Or are we strong because we did or didn't or are going to or are not going to? We'll be back.
Just stay on this frequency. We'll be right with you. Just stay on this frequency.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Show on House Parts. 1-800-STEP-12 is the number on the Stephanie Miller Show. Steph and the Mooks are away on vacation, and we are trying to have a legit conversation about the action or inaction policy in the Middle East, whether that's going into Syria, actually having a surgical strike or any other kind of military action in Syria is in the nation's interest. Is actually a good idea, and if by the president deciding to, while he has a strategy and a plan that he believes is right, going to the people's representatives in the form of Congress and saying, you guys can talk to your congressman, you guys can talk to your senator, and you can tell them what you think, and we will decide this together like a representative democracy, like we're supposed to be. Does that make the country weak? Does that make the president weak? Does that make us stronger because we're behaving that way? I happen to think so. But that doesn't mean you do. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. Now, here's the thing. Lindsey Graham could not be happier that the president thinks his point of view might be a valid one and that it is welcome in a conversation about any of this stuff. Let's go to this is Lindsey Graham at the same press conference that McCain was talking at.
But it is my hope that even a limited military strike can degrade Assad's ability to project force, particularly using chemical weapons. But there seems to be emerging from this administration a pretty solid plan to upgrade the opposition, to get the regional players more involved. Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Jordan, a lot of the Gulf Arab states have been helping quietly. Now's the time to get out front and be more overt.
Okay. First of all, hey, Lindsey Graham, thanks very much for telling the entire world and the Assad regime and anybody who might be fighting on his behalf that our other allies have been helping secretly. Thanks for saying that out loud in front of a bunch of reporters before they themselves have decided to stand next to us in a coalition and say these kind of things. So they either have to now stand up and say, yeah, we have been and take their lumps for it, or pretend they haven't been and tacitly back away. So thanks, Lindsey Graham, for dictating the PR and governmental policies of multiple other countries. That being said, were they at the same meeting? Because Lindsey Graham is saying the president actually has a plan to upgrade the opposition and to tip the balance in that regard. And McCain saying, I will only support something if it includes that. Would he doze off like Tucker Carlson in the middle of the meeting? What happened? They were both at the same meeting. They were literally, that was at the Rose Garden. They had just walked out of the meeting. Let's go back to the calls. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. Let's go to Dana in Maryland. Hi, Dana.
Hi. How are you?
Hi, good. Go ahead.
Good. It's good to see your sweet face.
Aw, thanks.
Hi, Tony. Hi, Rebecca. And hi, vacationers. Okay. And hi, chat.
Yes.
Okay. So what I call them are President Rumsfeld and Cheney, and I think they belong in the pokey, personally. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Bush left any ideas swirling in a bowl. I just don't even think he had much say, to be honest. I think what our president did was brilliant. I am, you know, behind him, you know, and now you're seeing people like Donald Rumsfeld on the air, you know, just bashing him.
Right.
Why? Because you're not going to make any money off it?
Well, and also Donald Rumsfeld, let's keep in mind, Donald Rumsfeld was making the case that we don't even need to know.
Right. He has a long resume of this.
Exactly. These are the least trustworthy. Anybody they trot out that had anything to do with the Iraq war run-up is immediately not just suspect, but you can just whatever they say is wrong. So if he's saying we should go in, all the more reason we're siding with the ones who say don't strike at all.
It's hard, though, Hal. So hard because, you know, I'm getting a lot of grief from my friends and a lot of my progressive friends. Well, you know, what if they were killing Jewish children? You know, comparing it to the Holocaust. I'm like, you know what? We knew about that, too, and we didn't do anything.
For years.
So maybe
multiple
it would
years,
have been
absolutely.
6 million. Maybe it would have been 500,000. Not that that would be any better. But we knew for years we didn't do anything about it. You can't, you know, there's no comparison.
No.
Again, mm-hmm. You know, stop trying to compare. But I'm on the fence. I don't, you know.
Well, that's why the debate is valuable. And
did you see Ann Curry, like, interviewing those children who are starving and being poisoned? I mean, it's just, you know.
Right. Well, there's a million refugees in Lebanon from Syria itself, just from this. I mean, that's and I guarantee the United States and UN and other people are dropping, are doing food drop-offs, doing all this kind of stuff. But they're not. They were showing a village, and I appreciate the call. We're right up against the bottom of the hour, and I want to be able to. We're gonna take calls on the other side of this. But they were literally showing this one tent village that they had set up. And they had a truck that was there to deliver food. They were prepared to deliver food for 800 people, and there were 8,000 people there. This is just the refugee aspect of this situation. Now, is the United States feeding a lot of those refugees? Probably. Certainly through the UN. Are we talking about it? No. Would it be a good idea in this drum up to the war to start mentioning that as well? Maybe. We're going to take your calls on the other side of this. It's a big conversation. 1-800-STEF-12 is our number. I'm at Hal Sparks on Twitter. Let me know what you think there if you can't make it to the phones. We'll be back.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. Now, the Syrian issue, we are going to deal with that more today because obviously that was the big turn this weekend. The president coming out making the case for why we should do limited strikes within Syria to degrade their chemical weapons abilities and to possibly support the rebels in their fight against the Assad regime. A regime that, by the way, was passed on from father to son. Those always work out well. They certainly did well for us, didn't they? I don't know what it is, man. Something about when dad used to rule the place and now the son gets a shot, that it just always kind of sucks. Just doesn't. There's a reason why we have a representative democracy to avoid that very thing, even though very recently we decided we'll put a pin in that kind of old-fashioned democracy and just go, hey, well, you know, Bush, you know, the dad knew what he was doing. Maybe his kid will know what he's doing. Let's pass it down from father to son. Give monarchy a try again, just for the heck of it, you know? Voted in for a government. Okay, that didn't work out. Nope, sorry. Worked out. It went so poorly that I think as charismatic, as qualified as I think Barack Obama was and is to be the president of the United States, I think we have largely the George W. Bush to thank for his getting into office, even more so than, you know, Palin and McCain, because people look, and this is, you know, not to get too Chris Rock on it, but this is the world we live in, where a C student legacy Yale student gets to be president if he's white, and the black president has to be an A student head of the Harvard Law Review. Like, you, what is the Chris Rock line? A black man has to fly to get something the white man can just walk to. And that's kind of what we're seeing in the presidential areas there. Yeah, I'm sure that'll get me a couple calls in there as well. But that being said, the president is sitting down with all these folks. But I want to address one thing before we get back to your calls. 1-800-STEF-12 is today is John Fugelsang's birthday. That's right, everybody. I want you to go to at John Fugelsang, our dear friend, the ecclesiastical mook, as he is often called, although I believe him to be in a class all by himself. I don't consider myself a mook because I'm not a regular, nor is John in that regard. So I think he's just John Fugelsang. And it is his birthday. And in honor of his birthday, I want to play his most recent beatdown. He was on Ed Schultz's show talking to this. They had a right wing cleric of some sort, Catholic or minister, what have you, making the case that Jesus wouldn't like Obamacare because, I don't know. I can't really actually grasp his reasoning. It didn't make any sense. And it didn't make any sense either to Ed or to John. And John's answer to what this guy said was genius.
The Christian faith is very clear. Feed the poor, heal the sick. Is it really Christ-like to take health care away from Americans that should have health care that will save their life?
Well, actually, Obamacare takes health care away from, $500 million was taken from old people, from Medicare to fund, basically slothful people who refuse to get jobs.
Jesus never asked a leper for a copay, and in Matthew 10:7, he commands his followers to heal the sick. Now, every option of health care on the exchange allows for a woman to choose a provider that will only allow abortion in cases of rape or incest. Where the chaplain's being disingenuous is that the only time that this will ever pay for abortion, if it's in the case of rape or incest, or if you believe, as the chaplain does, that contraception is the same as abortion. So I'd like to ask the chaplain, if I could, Jesus never at any point in the Gospels condemns abortion, even though people were terminating pregnancies at the time. He does come out, however, quite frequently against killing the sinner through the death penalty. So have you, sir, ever once protested your tax dollars being taken to fund state-sanctioned killing?
Jesus said in Mark 15, if anyone disobeys or dishonors his mother and father, he should be put to death. Jesus said in Luke 17...
No, sir, he did not say that. He said that... No, sir,
child,
he's quoting Leviticus.
Listen.
He's throwing that back in the face of the Pharisees. Some of us know that story,
if
sir.
Somebody...
Yeah, that guy, he cuts out the part where Jesus says, yeah, that doesn't count anymore. You're not supposed to behave that way. Jesus, the entire point of the gospel of the New Testament was to basically change direction from the eye for an eye mentality that is the Old Testament. That's the essence of it. And that's the point that Jesus was making. Like, yeah, it used to say that, but that's not how we live anymore. And that guy was just using it. And here's the thing. That guy preaches. That guy has a congregation. He tells people that every week. And if only John was allowed to just kind of, like, if they had to have a camera up there, like, and John on a big, widescreen, shot of John on their TV set going, no, actually, you're taking that verse out of context and you're doing it intentionally to sell a political arm. I love how that guy wants to use Jesus as a way of not getting health care. And of course, using the right-wing talking point of he took $500 million out of Medicare to support Obamacare or whatever. Yeah, waste and fraud and abuse. I thought you guys were for taking waste and fraud and abuse out of government. You all of a sudden you think that every dime spent by the federal government on a federal program is perfect? Liberals don't even think that. We just think you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. That's just absurd. But happy birthday, John. Please go to @JohnFugelsang and wish him a happy birthday today. The world is better for him being in it. And go scream at, be it CNN or MSNBC to give him his own show. I insist. Let's take a couple of calls and we'll take a break, and then I'm going to... there's more developments in the Syria stuff. So and by the way, Bill O'Reilly is right about something, and actually reinforces my opinion about what the president said about Syria. How do you like that? Not only do Bill O'Reilly and I agree, he gives a piece of advice that actually supports what the president did. Let's go to Mundy in, I'm assuming that is, in Nashville, North Carolina. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Great to hear you on the filling in for those guys.
Thanks. Awesome. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. So I thought your idea of dropping food, that is a great idea. And I think that's the kind of thing, certainly it would give them pause for a second or two.
Mm-hmm.
But I think instead of food, they should be dropping iPads and iPhones.
Well,
keep them occupied.
Sure, right. A different sort of Occupy movement. Just give them Angry Birds and hope they...
That's right.
You know what? I think all... You might be onto something. I think all religious fights over doctrine or anything that escalate to a point of battling should be done with Angry Birds. If you can get past level 14 on the original one with just one bird, your version of the Bible is right.
Yeah, well, God would take care of that. So then, if you lose, then you have to sit down.
Exactly. Yeah, and you know what's interesting is, all the dead people aside, the same result ideologically would occur. People would still disagree. People would still faction off. And it's interesting that you bring I don't know how you've taken this. Is your feeling that it was a good idea to hold back and actually go to Congress on this?
Yes, yes. Absolutely. I think because, first of all, you know, you didn't have that going to Iraq and Iran. You know, it's just like this is what we're kind
Afghanistan,
of.
Right.
What, well, they had the authorization, but it was a rubber stamp after they did fear mongering for a while.
Sure. Just yeah, panic so, everybody, I mean, use 9/11 and go, it's everywhere. We're surrounded. If we don't fight, we need to just, it's like missile command in reverse. You know, just start firing in every direction. Trust me, we'll hit a bad guy. The world is full of them. That was basically the foreign policy of the Bush administration.
And the Republicans have no credibility when it comes to strategic thinking.
Right.
Whereas the Obama has all the credibility in the world. I mean, like, all of his plans, for the most part, despite heroic obstacles, he's gotten through. You know what I mean? For the, you know, like,
right.
He hasn't got everything he's wanted. But, I mean, goodness God, he hasn't had anyone in his corner.
Don't even get me started on the conversations leading up to this. I'm going to play a clip from Tavis Smiley and Cornel West leading up to, this is right after the MLK 50 last Wednesday, pre-Syria. This is what they were saying. These are folks supposed to be on his side about stuff. Lefties are almost worse at giving credit where credit is due in regard to advancement of progressive ideas by this president. It's almost stunning. Like, it's one thing to hand weapons to the other side by just abdicating and going, I'm not going to vote because I'm not getting everything I want. But then they're literally handing ammo and going, no, aim here. And it's, even when they're wrong, it's amazing. I appreciate the call. I want to play this clip. So his idea, Monday's idea was we drop iPads and iPhones with Angry Birds, free copies of them. Maybe a bunch of Starbucks cards that give you free songs and free apps, you know, the ones you get at the counter when you go up. Yeah. Believe me, he's right. It would work. This is Tavis Smiley and Cornel West talking about the president being on the stage at MLK 50 and their perception of the lead up to Syria.
Well, on the one hand, as you can imagine, it was a beautiful thing. I was there in D.C. to see the magnificent expression of the faces, the sparkling eyes of everyday people of all colors, hungry, thirsty for justice, hungry and thirsty for truth. Then you turn to so many of the major organizers and major speakers at the march, not too much truth, not too much talk about justice, mainly talking about voting rights, and every once in a while you see a vague reference to jobs. Now, they had some wonderful speakers earlier in the day, but most of the country didn't get a chance to hear them. But for the most part, there was, I mean, Brother Martin himself, I think, would have been turning over in his grave. He wants people to talk about Wall Street criminality. He wants people to talk about war crimes with drones dropping bombs on innocent people. He wants people to talk about the new Jim Crow and the privatization of education and the various ways in which the well-to-do, the oligarchs and plutocrats are getting away with murder. You didn't hear that whatsoever. You not only got a tame Martin Luther King Jr., but there was a real sense in which who he really was at the end of his life hardly surfaced at all. And we saw, of course, the coronation of the bona fide House Negro of the Obama plantation, our dear brother Al Sharpton, supported by the Michael Dysons and others who have really prostituted themselves intellectually in a very, very ugly and vicious way.
Okay. All right. Whatever your opinion about Al Sharpton is, that's a rather cruel assessment. And when we come back, I'm going to take more of your calls about Syria because I, you know, the president is actually meeting with congressional leaders right now as we speak to discuss what they're going to do going forward, whether or not there's going to be a vote, what that vote may well be. But whatever your opinion of Al Sharpton is, calling him that and then referring to the Obama administration as a plantation, doesn't that denigrate people who are actually on a plantation, who are actually were slaves in the true sense of the word? Do you just water down the circumstance that people used to find themselves in when you use it as kind of a generalized linguistic mechanic to crap on somebody you disagree with? And I'm going to tell you when we come back how not only are we getting what we asked for with Syria, we're getting what we asked for with health care. We're getting what we asked for with the NSA. We're getting what we asked for with America's military direction. And half the people that are complaining about it don't even know. We'll be back.
Oh, it's a cross between beautiful and gross. I want to cry and vomit.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Welcome back to the show. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. But I'm not Stephanie Miller. I'm Hal Sparks. I'm filling in this morning. And this show is rushing by, largely for a couple reasons. One, the depth of topic. There is a lot to talk about in the, you know, and I'm sure over the next couple of days we will be doing this. We have a ton of calls. Literally, the phone lines are full. The chat room is blazing and alive and having a genuine conversation about this. And on Twitter as well, at Hal Sparks on Twitter, you can all week while I'm filling in, you can message me there if you're unable to make the, make it to a phone or you don't have the time and you want to, you know, get this, get your point across. We'll try and, go to that. And by the way, I mentioned, today is John Fugelsang's birthday. Please make a point on Twitter at some point today, letting him know that we love him and happy birthday. And also, in the back and forth about, you know, left and right and whether the media is pushing for us to go into Syria without blinking. I mean, all last week, it was the president is just, he's got his finger on the button and he's twitching. And the only reason he hasn't pushed it yet is because he hasn't finished his sandwich or something. Like, they literally were like, it's done. There's no discussion about any of this. He's not, you know. The president doesn't have to go to Congress, so he's not going to go to Congress, and we're just going to do a surgical strike, and the boats are moving. They're going to show up there, and therefore, end of conversation. There, you know that. And then when the president says, no, actually, I have made up my mind. I looked at the evidence as far as what my national security team has told me, and I believe it. But unlike my predecessor, this is a big deal. And rather than go full bore into this based on my own assessment of it, I'm going to let Congress, on the one hand, have their say, and on the other hand, put up or shut up. Because that's, you know, this armchair sniping that he gets from the right whenever he has to make a decision. The big problem that we have at the right is that they won't go on record about anything. This is not only is this the most filibustering Congress and Senate in the history of our government, but they're non-talking ones. There's only been a couple of them where there's actually been any speakers. Bernie Sanders and Rand Paul. And Rand Paul, in the middle of it, started to, like, veer off. Wendy Davis in Texas had to stay on topic the entire time or she lost her filibuster when she was talking about pro-choice, this anti-choice law that they were trying to push through. Rand Paul ends up talking about how one of the biggest, like, horrifying labor decisions by the Supreme Court was actually a good idea and the president should look at it. In the middle is talk about drone strikes, which, by the way, he was for. When he finally came out, they said, well, what do you really feel about drone strikes? He's like, well, I don't have a problem with, you know, if some dude is robbing a bank or something, or it was a liquor store with $50 in his hand. I don't mind a drone hitting him. What? You'd stand there for all those hours and talk about extrajudicial assassination of terrorist leaders and how this is an example of the Obama administration running wild and writing their own rules and all this kind of stuff. But then in the end, what you're really, when you're asked to make a point about what you really believe, you'd let a drone strike a dude robbing a liquor store for $50? Are you sure that guy didn't just have $50 in his hand when he was walking out and that the robber's behind him making him carry it? Who cares? The drone already hit him. Like, that's amazing. That's classic Ron Paul, or Rand Paul. Do we have time for one call? Because we're right up against it. Yeah, we only got 1 minute. You know what? I think everybody has enough to say. We're going to wait until the other side of the break because, like I said, the phone lines are full. Les has been holding on the longest. We'll get to Les as soon as we come back in. Then we'll go to Jeff in Phoenix. And we'll start chipping away at these because everybody's got something worth saying. And I want to hear it. The president wants a debate. I want a debate. It just so happens we're back in line. But I'm also going to explain to you how we're getting universal health care. You realize that? You realize that Obamacare has universal health care in it? Yeah, I don't want to tip the hat too much. But yeah, we'll be back. Sorry, I can't help it. It's Mike Patton, man. Learned how to sing higher notes cleaner from listening to Mike Patton. So, by the way, anybody listening, this is the Stephanie Miller Show, but when I fill in and Tony's working the board, A, we pick different music, and B, we get into these sideline discussions during the break about great music and how Faith No More should have gotten the name Soundgarden. And Soundgarden, all their songs kind of sonically sound the same, even though there's a lot of musical variety in them. Sonically, they sound the same. And a band called Soundgarden should have everything in it. And that's Faith No More. They're amazing. But he sings with his, he sticks his tongue out when he sings it. Back and, you know, like, yeah. And so by doing that, he doesn't harm his vocal cords. It's like another technique of how you do those kind of notes. And that's why he sounds squinty and kind of funny when he does it, but that's where it comes from. And anyways, back to real war, right? Or the potential, or what have you. Let's go to the callers, because there's a bunch on here. Let's go to Les in Orange County. Hi, Les. Thanks for holding on.
Yeah, by the way, either, you tell me if I'm wrong about this, but either Biden is locked away in a bunker somewhere with, this tape over his mouth so he can't talk, or I'm imagining things, but I swear I heard him say once on late night TV, a clip, that if Obama attacks, he will call for impeachment. Am I imagining things?
You are. You mean attack Syria?
Attack Syria. I mean, maybe I heard it. I was half asleep and it was. But
yeah,
my wife
there was no point where Joe Biden said that he would call for impeachment. There's been, I've heard people try to make the argument that if Obama used the AUMF to attack Syria, that would be grounds for impeachment, which I, unfortunately, I believe ethically to some degree, but I also know that legally there is such a ridiculous amount of history that is allow almost any president to attack every place but Washington, D.C. with missiles using the AUMF as a justification. That's the problem with it.
I thought I saw it or heard him say it. So, okay, good.
But I mean, he's certainly, you know, Biden's no pacifist. It's not like he isn't for, you know, a genuine course of military action when needed. He's not that way at all. He's just, like Obama is turning out to be in this particular case, is a lot more cautious about that decision than the previous administration, but that's true of almost any thinking person in the world.
No, that's right. But the point is, I thought I heard and saw him say it.
There's no point where impeachment would be on the table for a military action against Syria for violating the chemical weapons ban. Now, anybody who says that, by the way, would never be able to say we should have done something in Darfur, for example, because the same qualifications. This actually, the legal justification for an attack outside the UN with a single presidential decision is actually reinforced by the Kosovo action, more so than any other military action in the last 20 years. That's actually what would be used. And again, explanation is not advocacy, so don't panic, everybody, and tell me, you know, you shouldn't do that. I'm not saying should or what. I'm telling you how it would be justified legally. It absolutely could using that.
Okay, and by the way, Rand Paul, which seems like he could be running for president,
he is
saying that we have to protect the Christians. You know, it blows my mind that, you know, what about the rest of the people?
Right.
I mean, if you talk about religion, you would think unifies people. But it, to me, it doesn't. It just separates people. Oh, you're Christian, you're this. And he's running for president. To say that, is, to me, is bothersome.
Oh, it's incredibly frightening, Les, and it's a good point. Thanks for calling in. And it's so ironic because, I mean, selling that as your – here's the interesting thing. Again, Islam, the religion of Islam, and the Quran itself contains more references to Jesus in the form of Isa and as the son of Miriam, who is Mary in – you know, it's the historic Mary is referred to as Miriam in the Quran. And he's venerated as a prophet. He is absolutely called holy. They don't have the same thing about, singular Son of God and Trinity that the Christian religion, specifically the Catholic Church, really adamantly formulates as their structural idea of who Jesus was. But the respect is the same. He's even referred to as the Messiah. And so this idea that some Christians in this country have this idea that they're different in any way in their respect for Jesus, the Christ, the Nazarene, the Jesus of Nazareth that they know historically, and that that's what separates them from these awful, dirty Muslims who want to fight them because of, you know, it's all jihad and it's a religion of violence. Know that this religion of violence that you're screaming about actually references both more, not only Christ, that Jesus that you talk about, more so than it references Muhammad, but also is more respectful of Mary as an integral part of the story than the Christian storyline ends up giving it. She's actually risen to a higher level. And so this idea that somehow, again, my belief about these things is that these three, Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, seem to be the big fights going on in the Middle East, and we've been dealing with these forever. And they spread as far as the North when you had the IRA versus the English. A lot of that was political, much like the Free Syrian Army is probably a very political arm. They would like to vote for somebody other than the unopposed son of the last guy who was running the place, which is a big reason for having democracy. But a big portion of them, that they're, you know, people fighting alongside them are Al-Qaeda related or are hyper jihadists or are mercenaries put there by other governments and other religious groups that deeply believe in a more Wahhabist or very specifically just orthodox version of that particular religious sect. Which isn't that different from what happened with the IRA versus English. Yeah, it was a Protestant Catholic fight. But a lot of it also had to do with the fact that England had, had governmental control over Ireland, and a lot of people didn't believe that that should be. But now, on two levels, there were people who were just simply fighting because they didn't think the C of E and the Catholic Church, should dictate where they're allowed to live and who they're allowed to marry and what church and all that kind of stuff. And then there were people also fighting for we should be able to determine our own leaders. And I think there's a lot of similarities in what's going on there. But this idea that Christians and Jews and Muslims are fighting each other over some sort of deep-seated religious idea, I think is a farce. Because the God that's referenced in all those works is the same person. The argument ends up being, who's a prophet versus a savior versus a messiah? The last guy, not the overall guy. We all believe in the same God. You call him Allah, and they call him Yahweh and whatever, and we're not all supposed to draw him or say his name, and it's a he in all those religions. But they all agree on that. But just how and who his actual son and heir is, which is just monarchical BS from tribal kingdoms of that time. And ultimately, all this fighting is murderous and cruel and so far from the essential teachings of all three of those ideas when you really get down to it, if you scrape away all the tribal nonsense that was stacked on top of it, that it's like a bunch of people blowing each other up over whether or not Superman could beat up the Hulk. I take it back. More like whether or not Thor could beat up the Hulk, because they're all Marvel. You know, if you're using the analogy that they're all from the same line. That really is it. That's what the fight is. And here's the thing. There are people who believe in the Hulk so much that they will gas the people who believe in Thor. I mean, that's really it. That's and it's happening. So the question becomes, do you get involved in a fight where people are arguing something so ridiculous? Or do you go, well, one person is actually gassing the other person. We have to do something mechanically about that. Why they're fighting, that's for later. But that they're doing this is meaningful. Let's take a call real quick because we got a bunch of people that have been holding on long. Let's go to Jeff in Phoenix. Hey, Jeff. Are you there?
Hello?
Hey, Jeff.
Hey, how you doing? Listen, when I woke up and saw that these chemical agents was used in Syria, I saw people carrying bodies out of the so-called area. Mm-hmm. But there's something that was missing. There's something called secondary contamination. If they used a chemical nerve agent, those people who were picking up the people would have been just as dead as the people who were picking up, not unless they were zombies. That is being staged. That's why when a camera goes over the face, it doesn't stay on anybody's face too long because they should be purple looking by now. It is staged. And when it comes to Travis Smalley, what he said, it's 100% correct. Do you think that black people don't know that we did not pick Al Sharpton or Jesse Jackson as our leaders? They've been picked by the powers that be. So whenever something happens, they say, hey, those Negroes acting up. Hey, Jackson, you go down there, let them march around a while, and then tell them to go back home and get on the plane and come back. He is 100% correct. Obama, a constitutional scholar, the Nobel should be asking for their prize back, the Nobel Peace Prize, because this is ridiculous.
Hold on. So you believe that the Syrian that the chemical attack was staged, or that I'm just reassessing what you're saying here. You believe that the chemical attack was staged, and that by going to Congress instead of acting just kind of on reflex, the president is more culpable in it.
No, forget about the Congress stuff, because this whole thing is staged by two governments. I'll tell you that in a second. You cannot go into a chemical biological area where that gas has been used without wearing protective clothing, breathing apparatus.
No, that I understand. I'm with you there. But then, okay.
Never mind the part about Congress. Let's just figure out who's behind this. Never mind the part about him going around Congress.
And who do you think is behind it then?
That's irrelevant. The people of Syria voted for the Muslim Brotherhood three times. There's only two governments that don't want to deal with them, the United States and Israel, okay? Just like you said, there are antagonists on the ground that have kick-started up this entire conflict.
In the case of Assad, there was no vote for the Muslim Brotherhood in Syria. He ran unopposed. There was no actual genuine election at all. It was classic Saddam Hussein nonsense
that's Americans telling us once again. You know how it should be unique that they can always tell us what took place or somebody said such, such, but they can never let you hear it? What you're saying is classic American.
Where am I wrong? Did they have a vote that I'm not aware of?
When you get ready to say that, you know, where it was like, you know, you had to pick for the son. Like, you know, we had to, like, when they pick, like when they give us a president. Yeah, you could pick between Obama or McCain. It's a classic American style. You're trying to say that's what took place there. That, you know, the son left the father, so you had, the father left the son, so you had to pick the father. It's like in the United States, okay? Here, you got to pick from these two. They all bought already, so you can either pick Obama
is a complete drift from the conversation. Here's what we have to take a break. Hold through the break. I want to keep talking to you about something. Because this is if you want to talk about classic American revisionism, I think classic American gripe politics. And I take issue with what you said, but I want to actually have a conversation rather than just kind of hang up on you and, you know, so hold for me and we'll talk to you on the other side of the break.
You want to get nuts? Come on, let's get nuts.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks. Yeah, we play Danko Jones. That's what we do. So on the line with us, Jeff from Phoenix, I was talking to him before the break. And Jeff, you were making the case are you there? Are you with us? Jeff?
We have a talk to practice.
Jeff?
Well, we could actually. Hello?
Are you there? Hi.
Yeah, yeah, some of you have it. Mm-hmm.
Good, okay. So, before the break, you were making the case that I've heard many people make that this was staged. And I saw the footage you're talking about. I was immediately suspect about it. It seemed to me that there were people who were horribly affected by the gas that was sent and people walking by in the background without anything over their faces. And that was a big concern with a lot of folks. The inspectors went in. They have yet to do their findings. One of the big concerns was that there was actually a ratcheting up for conflict before the inspectors even had taken their samples anywhere for testing, much less figured out if, in fact, they were used, who, in fact, used them. Now, that process is actually in play now. As much as I think there are a lot of people in the government who can't wait to do this, McCain and Lindsey Graham are certainly for it. They've been pushing it for it ever since. I mean, McCain actually met with the Free Syrian Army and pushed for exactly what's happening now back then. But you made the case that I was erroneous in my description of the Assad regime as one that was passed down from father to son.
And you also made
the assertion that our government is somehow equally illegitimate or equally legitimate on the same panel because we're giving two choices and we only get to vote for those two choices. That somehow that's the same.
Let me tell you something. Anytime it costs $1 billion or I forgot how many hundreds of millions to run for president, it's the same. Now, I didn't say...
Same as what? It's the same as what?
It's the same as being passed down, except for it's the power that be that's picking who you're going to choose from while they're still pulling the strings. The president is the president. He's a figurehead.
So you think some version of the Affordable Care Act or some version of what's going to come out as immigration reform that this president is pushing for, or that gay rights or that women's rights under this president would have been exactly the same if McCain had become president or Romney had become president, because the same people are pulling their strings?
Now, listen, those are just small pickings that's given to the people.
So you're not, that's because you're straight and you're male and part of that. Or that you have health insurance.
What I'm talking about is the real issues. For instance, as soon as the president got in there, the first thing he did, and I don't recall, the continent of Africa asking for the United States to take control over Africa. The AFRICOM, they signed a bill called AFRICOM. The president of this, now the only person who pulled something like that off would be a black president. And that was the first thing he did in the office on the second day.
So we took over Africa.
AFRICOM. Look it up, AFRICOM.
Okay.
Second day, in office. He passed, signed the bill. Quietly signed this bill.
You mean the free trade agreement there?
Not a free trade agreement. We needed to take that place over. The United States needs to take over the continent of Africa because China has been in there doing what's called hegemony. We've been doing it, but we've been giving the countries like medicine, but we're going to make sure we keep you poor now. They're going to be doing your feet. We're going to get all the natural resources we want from you. But China's been in that country building roads and schools, and now they're starting to discover oil throughout Africa. So the United States doesn't want China to become a superpower, which is headed for. So the United States has signed a bill the second day Obama came to office called AFRICOM, giving the United States control over 54 countries in Africa, like they asked for that.
So the United States has control over 54 countries in Africa.
Well, I'm talking to you. Google it. AFRICOM.
No, I understand AFRICOM. What you're saying, but we have strategic control over...
The United States doesn't have control. The United States is trying to take control.
Okay, so
control.
But that's a huge difference. That's a huge difference, and I think there's a total loss of semantical argument in everything that you're saying,
and it's
childish. And here's what... No. Wait a second. Mm-hmm. Because what you get to do is every time I ask you to address a specific thing, you get to jump ship to another argument, and all of it ends up with a singular imperial march, and that there is no vague difference in this. And no, hold on one second. You are literally saying to me that no matter who gets elected in the United States, the exact same process will occur, that everything that is different is simply window dressing, no matter how it affects anybody's life either way. To you, it's simply window dressing because the energy needs and wants of the United States are singular, and that's the only thing we actually care about. The rest of it is just a way of manipulating the public into voting for that particular person. And in that way, according to you, we have the same effective government that Syria does.
You stretched it. You're not saying we have the same effect that governing as Syria has.
Yeah, you said there's no difference. No, no, no. That was the language you used.
Hold on a second. If I'm telling you that's not what I'm saying, but you're insisting that it is what I'm saying, I'm telling you it's not what I'm saying. I'm simply saying to you that the people of Syria, you're saying as if that, you know, that election before was, you had a choice. The father left the son, you could pick the son. That wasn't it. And I'm saying if that was it.
Wait one second. Syria, okay, we only got a minute left. Syria, did they or did they not have a single leader run unopposed in the last election that they had?
Yes, they did.
That's what I asked you, and you said, no, they didn't. Secondly, is there any singular difference between a populace that, informed or not, can legally make a decision between two people and two distinct political parties who actually have different plans, and informed or not, are able to act out those things? Is that different politically? We got 30 seconds left on the show. I tried to actually have the conversation with it, but there's a certain point where we're running around in circles. And I'm not going to stand here and pretend that our representative democracy is, A, not a sham on one level in certain areas and needs to be cleaned up and opened up, but allow it for it to just be BS. I'll see you tomorrow. I'm going to explain Syria to tomorrow. I'm going to the whole country. I'm going to explain it. We'll see you tomorrow.